This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasure on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Let's get into the show. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist ho who lives in New York City and is socially distancing and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, I am one demisexual mental health professional who's also socially distancing and pronouns she and her.
So on every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising, myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally, we hit you with interviews from insightful folks. This episode, we're talking about the ins and outs of virtual sex parties, self-care tips for survivors of sexual assault, South by Southwest sexy short film selections, missing periods, how to keep the fire burning when you and your partner are quarantining apart, and growing tired of masturbation, and much, much more.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Ho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community. That is C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y. You can head over to innerhouprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, to pay a ho, and to check out the rest of our merch.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, Black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or if you would like us to host a consent or pleasure or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Now we're going into a little segment that we like to call Ho of the Week. Ho of the Week is when we shout out homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nickname. So we have many, many Hoes of the Week this week, and I'm so happy about that.
So excited.
Right? So we got Aurora Daisy, who is just very uplifting towards Inner Ho Uprising on Twitter. And that is like so sweet and so nice. And I don't know who's up at 6 a.m. other than me and Aurora Daisy. But earlier in this week, Aurora Daisy was like, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. I was finishing up the worst IHU edit in many, many years because last week's recording was really tough in terms of audio. And I see at 6:46 a.m. You should all give at Inner Ho Uprising podcast a listen, because honestly, these people are so validating and funny and all good, and seriously give me so many good feels. Great educational content too. Just 10 out of 10. I've listened to all the episodes and it's seriously gold heart. And Akua, seeing that after pulling an all-nighter with this bullshit-ass audio at 6:46, when you're in bed about to just, like, put on your eye mask because the sun is, like, beaming through the window and you can't do anything else, it's so nice and uplifting. Mm-hmm. And I love when you all do that. Thank you so much, Aurora Daisy. Because I only know your at name, I cannot give you a nickname. So right now, you are Aurora Daisy.
Yes.
In addition to that, we have Caroline, a.k.a. North Kakalaki. So North Kakalaki featured us in an article on Elite Daily about good sexual health resources right now. So thank you, North Kakalaki, for writing that. Then we got Josephina, or at It's Joey. Your nickname is Hunter, and we want to thank you for dropping a PayPal donation with a very sweet note. And I'm sorry for forgetting about you that one time on Instagram, but I'll never forget ever again. Then we got KZ, whose nickname is the letter K and the letter Z, who became a new patron. Thank you very much, KZ. Some nicknames, a lot of thought. Some are just like they flow naturally, you know? We got Calvin Pierce Jr., who is really an Inner Ho Uprising, like, down-ass bitch, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like
a day one, okay? Yeah. Yeah. Day one.
Calvin, along with Akua, produced Monogame. What was it called again? Polygamy.
Yes.
Calvin recommended a lot of the people who ended up being on that series. So thank you so much, Calvin. And also recently he became a new patron. And your nickname is C-Jizzy. Then we got Aish, a.k.a. Ish. That's your new nickname, who became a patron on Patreon. Thank you very much. We got Aurelia. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but your nickname is now Lily, and we thank you for becoming a new patron. We got Angelica, a.k.a. Pickles, who became a new patron. I also kind of want to name you Ross, though, but I'll stick with Pickles. Thank you for becoming a new patron. We got Celeste, a.k.a. Celestial Being, who became a new patron. Lucius came back. Lucius Lion, a.k.a. your real name is Lana, who dropped some PayPal donations in the PayPal. Thank you very much. And we want to thank our Apple Podcast reviewers for this week. We got good old T-Ray. Ray, I just wanted to bark his name sound like. Like I'm a dog. T-Ray Ray.
But that's how you have to say it from now on, because that's how I hear it.
Yo, when New York opens back up and I happen to see T-Ray Ray on the street, I am like in my greatest like year, like just coming from my diaphragm.
It's like T-Ray a part Ray. DMX, part New York. There's a oomph in there. There is an oomph. That you have to hit, but yes.
You feel it in your butthole with that one. Right. Like you clench everything. Anyway. Also, thank you to Sid. And thank you to My Pussy Power. Thank you so much for your lovely podcast reviews. Those really mean a lot. Also, I want to shout out our new sweepstakes winner. So we did a sweepstakes that ended in April. And the person who won never came forward. So I had to select a new sweepstakes winner. So the new person is Deb Pryor. Please check your email for how to go forward so we can send you your prize. Once again, that is Deb Pryor. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname, here are some things you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can shout us out in an article you've written on social media. These are some of the non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many, many folks. So please do not spend your bottom dollar on us. Put you and yours first. You gotta put yourself first twice. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/innerhoeuprising, or you can purchase merchandise at innerhoeuprising.com/merchandise, the links to which are in the show notes. Now we're going to get into self-care tip of the week, where we give you some tips on how to care for yourself. This one I'm going to do a quick content warning, because there will be mentions but no details regarding sexual assault, so please check the show notes. If you wish to avoid this segment, you can skip to the time in the show notes. So, with former Joe Biden staffer Tara Reid coming forward with allegations that then-Senator Biden, Vice President Biden, sexually assaulting her in 1993, and the Black woman-led Twitter reckonings of alleged sexual assault predators at Blogzilla and at Chris Stiles, that's two Z's at the end, and the subsequent backlash directed to all of the aforementioned women, you might have found this week a tough week to be a survivor of sexual assault, rape, coercion, and anything in that umbrella. If you're unaware of any of these stories and wish to learn more, I will link to the articles about them in the show notes, but we will not be covering those stories today on this podcast. What we will be doing, however, is a self-care tip for survivors of sexual assault who may have found the news and social media triggering this week. So these tips are from RAIN, which is the Rape Abuse Incest National Network, a nonprofit anti-sexual assault organization in the U.S. And some of the tips are just for me. So let's talk about the news media a little bit. RAIN reminds you that you are in control of what you see. You don't owe it to anyone to be familiar with any of these news stories right now, in the past, in the future, whatever. If a particular piece is upsetting, angering, or otherwise making you uncomfortable, you do not have to read it, listen to it, engage with it, or anything like that. Remember that it's not just news. Even news outlets have to work hard to attract readers. These accounts might be graphic, sensationalize the crime, or even defend the perpetrator. So you got to keep that in mind when you're taking in this information. Even on social media, a lot of people, it kind of becomes like a trauma porn. Mm-hmm. Where people want to hear and read the stories of other people, not because they actually care about them, but because they like the sensationalness of it and the drama and the tea and the mess. And, you know, keep that in mind when you're engaging with these stories. So in addition to it's not just news, remember the fact that people are going to react. So stories of sexual violence tend to prompt reactions from the public who either agree or disagree with the allegations. It can be painful to read about people not believing a survivor's story or the difficulties of a particular investigation. So remind yourself that these stories are not happening to you in this moment, and find comfort by talking to someone that you trust. Try to avoid reading comments and online news stories related to sexual violence. Yeah, the comments are never freaking good. Let's talk about socials. So when it comes to social media, keep in mind that you are in control of your social media experience. If you see something that makes you uncomfortable, you can exit a window at any time. You can close an app at any time. When posting on social media sites, explore privacy and viewing settings to control what information you share with others and what information is visible to you. My personal suggestion, mute accounts, mute hashtags, and mute words. You can mute accounts on Instagram and block accounts. You can mute accounts, hashtags, and words on Twitter. Not quite sure what you can do. You can mute people on Facebook. I don't know about specific terms or anything like that. Also, you can block or mute accounts who are specifically saying harmful things about survivors. We got the fact that sharing is a double-edged sword. Many survivors share their stories online. These outlets can give survivors a voice and help them move forward. Reading these stories might be inspiring, but it also runs the risk of causing anxiety or other unexpected things. Keep in mind, you are not obliged to share your story publicly. That is a personal choice. If you're someone who has been assaulted by the same people who are in the news right now, or someone else who is of prominence, and, you know, I think one of the beauties of these things is that they do inspire other people to come forward. But in that inspiration, in that kind of like cycle thing, you might be feeling like, oh, should I come forward? But remember that you don't have to. You don't ever have to. It's really your personal choice. Rain makes it a point to note that minors should be cautious. So if you are a minor in the United States, reporting laws may vary from state to state. But in some cases, if a minor posts personally identifying information related to sexual abuse, the reader may have an obligation to report it. And you can learn more about the laws in your state. I'll give you a little link to a resource where you can read up on those. And last but not least, from Rain, not everyone uses social media for good. Sometimes people use technology to hurt other people. People do that pretty frequently, actually. They may engage with a survivor in a bullying, unsolicited, or non-consensual way. They could also belittle someone's character or expose details of someone's life that aren't meant to be shared. This use of social media can leave the other person on the other end feeling uncomfortable or scared. So that is the tips from Rain. I put together two additional tips and just a note. One thing that has helped me during these times and seeing this on my feed is that there's a community out there who seeks to protect and uplift you, or remembering the fact that there's a community out there who seeks to protect and uplift you. I know engaging with this, like these stories on social media and like going on like Instagram lives with some of the survivors and things like that, people can be shit. And the comments and the retweets can be inundated with like, I don't believe yous and those kinds of things, and like really, really nasty language and behavior from people. And you can kind of take that and internalize it when it comes to your own experiences and think, no one would ever believe me, or remind you of a time when no one didn't believe you or something like that. But there are also people out there and comments out there that you also don't have to engage with, but that are supportive of survivors and want to protect survivors and want to uplift the voices of survivors. So keep that in mind, that there are people out there who are actually on your side. Secondly, if something you don't want to see slips through and triggers you because there wasn't a word that you muted, or somebody in a group chat fucking sent you something against your consent, take a moment, breathe, and develop some affirmations that assert the fact that you are safe and in control in the moment that you have received a trigger. And that just made me think of a third tip. If people are talking about this in your group chats and you do not want to engage with that, set a boundary in your group chats or with your friends saying, don't post it, like don't share this with me, or if you want to share something, you're gonna have to ask me first. Last but not least, for resources, to speak with someone who is trained to help, call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. That number is 800-656-4673, or you can chat online at online.rain.org. That will be in the show notes along with other information and other resources.
Thank you, Sam. That was so beautifully put together.
Thank you, Okua. All right, now we're going to get into some plugging of events, because we have some events coming up and they are digital. And they are virtual, but they do mean things to us. And hopefully they mean things to you. So we're doing some IHU film screenings. There's mad shit in the sex, love, and dating world to watch while we're all in quarantine. Or some of us are not in quarantine, but we just want to hang out virtually with our community. So we'll be watching some shit together as a whole family. Some screenings will be open to everyone and some will be patrons only. So this Thursday, May 7th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, we're doing a patrons only screening of the film Cam, Akua's favorite film. If you are not on YouTube, Akua is shaking her head.
Read this and I said, this sadistic bitch just trying to get us all. Sam acts like she cares. She don't care. She don't care about y'all.
No, it is. It's a good movie, though. It is a good film.
It's very fun to watch with your friends, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Cam is a techno horror about a cam girl who has her principles until a mysterious woman who looks just like her takes over her channel. Ooh. Two notes. So Cam is directed by someone who was a former cam girl, and also the lead character is white, if any of those things influence how you feel about movies. Then this Saturday, May 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern time, we're doing an open screening. That means everybody, patrons and non-patrons, of Jezebel. Jezebel is a coming of age story about a vulnerable young woman who becomes a webcam model after moving to Las Vegas to live with her family, but her growing popularity tests their bond. That is written, directed, and loosely based on the life of Haitian American filmmaker and Black woman Numa Perrier. So once again, Cam, May 7th, 5:30 p.m. That will be patrons only. You'll be emailed the link to that screening party. And Jezebel, May 9th, 2 p.m. Eastern time, open watch party for everybody. You can hit up the Eventbrite link in the description of this episode to come through. Getting into our segment that we like to call Fuck That. It is our current events segment. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the fact that Zoom has said no to virtual play parties.
No boom boom in the Zoom room.
No boom boom in the Zoom room.
Sad.
But we won't leave you with just that disparaging news. We'll also be talking about where you can go for your virtual online sex parties and a beginner's guide to find one and start your own if we're feeling frisky.
He got you covered.
So if you don't know by now, really, I don't know where you've been. Because as we have turned to all things virtual in the age and the times of the Rona, Zoom has become a very big platform in the recent year, in the recent 5 months. And Zoom, which was previously a business video and conferencing platform, but has now become one of our major ways of staying connected socially with our loved ones and our family, people out here. We're doing mass by Zoom. We're doing family game nights by Zoom. And because of, the times that we're in, Zoom used to have, they've jumped from 10 million users to 200 million users.
Holy shit.
Since March. Like, that is such a large jump. So as you can see, many people have turned to Zoom as a way to stay connected. As we turn to virtual meetings, of course, the things we used to do in person, our sex lives have not stopped. We used to go to those play parties and we wanted a way to do it virtually. And if we can co-op Zoom for Sunday mass and game nights, why not my sex party? Or so we thought.
Dum, dum, dum. All I want to do is do a Zoom and you boom, boom.
Now, of course, having virtual play parties via virtual meetings have always been an issue because it's so hard to enforce consent. It's so hard to make sure that all of the members are safe. It's hard to control the environment and make sure people aren't, grabbing content or screen grabbing or screenshotting things. And Zoom has had some security breaches with their Zoom bombers lately as our usage of it has jumped. And for those that don't know, Zoom bombers are trolls who hijack public links
to harass people and or post racist or anti-Semitic language. So as people have been thinking, you know, as we have been thinking, can we move, how do we move our sex parties, our sex lives onto virtual spaces? Zoom came out and said, nah, not over here though.
Not in courtroom 504.
Not in courtroom 504. They said no. A representative of Zoom reiterated their user policy, saying that it explicitly prohibits any obscene, indecent, illegal, or violent activity or content on the platform, really hinting at the fact that sexual acts fall in the terms of obscene and indecent. We'll talk about it another time. And that it's not acceptable use for their platform, and that they will be monitoring. They have many ways of following up on reported suspected violations, using a mix of tools, quote unquote, including machine learning to proactively identify accounts that may be in violation. So really, they're trying to say that they have AI.
Looking at your titties.
That will be here to find out if you are, you know, having your play party through Zoom. That was the statement by the representative. It contradicts what Zoom has already stated to be their privacy guidelines, and that they don't have any access to video, audio, chat content that users have when using the platform. They don't store it or monitor it in any way. So I don't know how they'll be using this AI to catch us. But because of that, sex positive organizations are already wary. They were already wary of going virtual. Now that knowing that Zoom is kind of saying, no, we ain't about to do it, they've become even more so wary. In response, there are other platforms, adult dating platforms, that are looking to create their own space for virtual parties for those that need to indulge. And one of them is Adult Friend Finder. Now, I had no idea what Adult Friend Finder was. But Adult Friend Finder is an adult dating, camming, and hookup site that has over 40 million members. And it's under the parent company of Friend Finder Networks, who also operates live sex cam sites such as cam.com, stripshow.com, and icams.com. But Adult Friend Finder is launching their own platform for virtual play parties, which they are going to be calling Virgy. And it is a portmanteau of the word virtual and orgy.
I really enjoy that.
It sounds childish. Like it sounds like a child's toy.
Oh no, yikes.
But Virgy will be an orgy specific site that allows users to host private and public video chats with up to 20 people at a time for absolutely free. I tried to like sign in and do my journalistic duty and see what it really was about, but the website overall seemed a little sketchy to me. I didn't like the layout, so I was just like, yeah.
Did it have the HTTPS? Was it a secure site? Okay.
Yes. Okay. It was a secure site, though. I don't know. Maybe it's just it wasn't aesthetically pleasing for me. I don't know what it was. I think it might have just not been aesthetically pleasing for me. So that made me a bit wary. But they have 40 million users. And
that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
They could really be fucking online. Damn.
They just be finding people to fuck with online. And I'm over here like, I hate these dating apps. I'm obviously on the wrong place. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, where do you find these people, yo? Like, where are these people finding these people who they feel comfortable? Like, you can't even trust people to not record you in real life, bro. Like,
in real life.
Where are you finding people who you don't like? What? That's interesting. One note, I think it should be called Vorgy instead of Virgy.
Yes. I like that. I like, see, they need to hire you, Sam. Put Smith on the payroll. And also want to note that the Friend Finder Network had experienced massive data breaches of members' personal data back in 2015 and 2016. They have seemed to have made amends as they needed to, but just enough information if that is a platform that you want to go to for your virtual sex orgies, you know? But if you don't want to try that, Vice has released a guide to online group sex, and we'll link the article below. It goes through how to find an online sex party, with tips of seeing if you're local, if you've already been a part of a group or had that kind of community, seeing if they have already switched online and what they're doing. They've also talked about other international organizations that have gone online and that are offering new members and new deals, such as the New Society for Wellness, which is a Manhattan-based Soho club that has moved online and is offering $50 a month as a membership fee or $10 per party, which is a real New York thing. Or the Purple Mamba Club, which I need to get to, which is a UK-based club. I love the name Purple Mamba Club.
Yeah, sounds fun.
I was like, oh, I gotta follow. It's a UK-based club, and they have also moved their parties and their workshops online. So if you're a beginner, those could be new places to start. Vice also gives us tips on how to start our own party with tips on platforms you can't use, like Zoom and Skype, because of their no nudity policies. Also, Skype has a no cursing policy, and I'm like, how do you enforce that?
Yeah, I've cursed on Skype so many times.
What? platforms you can use, like FaceTime or Google Hangouts, and their limitations, as well as tips to, no matter where you decide to go, tips on using discretion in your advertisement, and always, always, always use separate accounts for the things that you do. You do not want to sign into your work email as PussyPopper99. No, you don't.
Well, it depends on what your work email is, I guess.
Well, yeah. And of course, reminders about consent and privacy, such as do not record people, do not take pictures with people without people's permissions, do not send nudes while you're in these chats without people's permissions. And if you're a little worried about your privacy, to wear a mask, wear a wig, keep your video off to protect your identity.
Hide your tattoos.
Ooh, smart. Dab a little concealer on that. Dab a little concealer on it. Yes. So, yeah, I want you guys to tell us how you are indulging in your sex parties if you are online. How has that moved for you virtually? And good luck party hunting.
All right. Thank you for that, Akua. That was very insightful. Definitely tell us about your Zoom hookups and things like that. Or you're not Zoom hookups. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your Vorgies and the like.
Your Vorgies. I love it.
Whether you're listening to your favorite fucking mature podcast that curses a lot, or you're watching somebody get it in on OnlyFans on your phone or your laptop, or you're enjoying some audio erotica, you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to, not what your kids or your roommate or your partner or your mom are listening to. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands you know. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are the best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts. Akua is listening, has been listening to things in her Raycons recently. Tell us about how that's been going.
So I put them on, and I don't read directions, y'all, but it worked to my advantage. I put them on, and then I was like, oh, let me get the directions. And I'm walking by, as I'm walking back to where I placed the case, all I can hear is my footsteps, like this inward motion. All the other noise was
quite noise canceling.
Like remarkably so. I get the directions and realize I didn't need it. Pairing it really is,
it's mad easy.
Seamless. Yeah. It's literally 1, 2, 3. A child can do it. Your 4-year-old can do it. And then of course I tested it. I put on one of my favorite podcasts. I left my phone in one room, earbuds in another. I was transferring through rooms, not a break, not a drop, nothing. I was like, yo, I really enjoy them. I've enjoyed them thus far.
Yay.
They are the shit. They are the shit.
Shout out to Raycons. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during video calls. Fun fact, Raycon was co-founded co-founded by your favorite hat-moving Love and Hip Hop star Ray J, and Love and Hip Hop royalty like Cardi B loves her Raycons, so you can pick up a pair and see what the hype is all about. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. You get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/IHU. That's buyraycon.com/IHU. I as in inner, H as in ho, U as in uprising for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. That's buyraycon.com/IHU. Now let's get back to the show. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. What you doing on your... All right, we're moving on to a segment that we like to call Fuck Me. It's about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives. And the segment within the new we're debuting today, it's a new segment that I'm calling Sam Presents Ass Media. It's a play on the term mass media. If you listen to last week's episode, which you don't have to understand this, I said that I am taking a break from sharing about my personal life while I deal with trauma. And in the interim, I'll be giving book, TV, podcast, film, or any other kinds of media reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. Usually spoiler-free reviews, unless I think it calls to be spoiled. This week, I'll be going over some South by Southwest shorts. So South by Southwest is a big-ass festival that was canceled this year, like many other festivals canceled this year due to COVID-19. As a result, many of the films that were set to play the festival were picked up by Amazon Prime and also the website MailChimp, which was really random, but I appreciated them for doing it, to screen these for a limited time for free. And many other films will probably appear in places in the coming weeks. Like one of the films is on Netflix already and things like that. So by the time you're listening to these, they'll be on Amazon until the end of today, the day this drops on May 6th. And the ones on MailChimp will probably still be available on MailChimp. I'll drop the links to watch these in the show notes. And they're all short films. So if you listen to this and you're like, oh man, only got a couple hours left in the day, you can like literally watch it in like an hour. So first up, we got a film called A Period Piece. The synopsis of this is Geetha, a control and order-loving Indian-American woman, finally has sex with Veed one afternoon, but things quickly turn messy when period blood stains her pristine couch and a fight erupts mid-coitus. So I really enjoyed this one because it uses a moment in two people's lives as a marker for what becomes a turning point in their relationship. So I think like the first time you have sex with someone can make or break the relationship or define where you're going in that relationship or what comes next or whether it stops or not. And I think that's wonderfully captured in this little 10-minute film. Plus, it normalized two Indian American folks having sex on screen for an Indian American audience and just an American audience in a world that I think, like, whenever I watch media with Indian American folks, it's always talking about the arranged marriage thing or the Indian person is going after a white person, which I know that happens sometimes, but it is a tired trope. I don't want to see it anymore. I don't want to see so much of it. And this, like, there's no white people involved. It's just like two Indian niggas.
Having sex. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Exactly. Sorry. Yeah. Like not out. Well, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't think I have.
So period sex drives the plot in that it happens and then other things happen because of it, but it's not like an exploration into period sex or like, you know, on Twitter, like y'all be fucking on y'all period or like ew, period sex, y'all be having that. Like, it's not made to be strange or grotesque. It's just like, yeah, we're fucking, a period is happening, that's it. So you can watch this on Amazon until the end of today. Unfortunately, it's not on MailChimp at this time, but I would definitely suggest that you watch this one. I really enjoyed it and support, like, it's also directed by an Indian American director woman. Yes. So like, support her. Come on.
Yes, a woman of color. Yes,
exactly. Okay. Our next film is called Single. The synopsis of this one is a girl born with one arm gets set up with a guy who has one hand. And she is pissed. And she was pissed. That was interesting. So this film depicts two disabled folks on a date, which I'm also not certain that I've ever seen in a film outside of a documentary. So I appreciated that. And it's not disability porn where you feel bad for either character because you're just getting you're literally just getting a peek into two people's dating lives. So it's not like blinders on, like, there's a disability, we're not going to talk about it. And it's not like, mm-hmm. there's a disability, we got to talk about it. It's not like either way. It's just like, literally, this is a part of their lives and you're getting a peek into two people's lives through, like, the same mm-hmm. way that a period piece explores two people's lives through the lens of this one sexual encounter. This is exploring two people's lives through the lens of a date. It also explores internalized ableism, as read in the synopsis, where it's like, and she is pissed, because she really was mm-hmm. pissed. And I like the fact that it gives grace to the main character, who, like, people do be, they do have internalized ableism. Like, people have internalized mm-hmm. anti-blackness, internalized homophobia and things like that. And it's not like a judgment or a sentence or anything like that. It's just an exploration of what's going on, like what's going on in her mind. And it gives her grace to be messy and figure it out. I love reality TV. This might speak to 3 people. It might speak to 10 people. I don't know how many people it's going to speak to. But if you are a fan of The Challenge, Jordan is in this film. And if you're a fan of The Challenge, you know who Jordan is. And Akua is looking at me like, who the fuck is that? Hey. He's a white guy on The Challenge who's very annoying. He's an asshole, but he's very good at it. That's all I'll say. Something that I didn't like about this film, and this is a spoiler in that I'm going to tell you about the scene, but it's not a spoiler in that it depicts the plot or anything like that. So the main character, she has one arm. She's finishing up grocery shopping, and she is online, and this little black girl, like an actual little, like 7-year-old or something like that, is staring at her, and the little black girl drops her doll, who is mm-hmm. a little black girl doll. Like, it's actually a black doll. And the main character picks the doll up, gives her the doll, and the girl keeps staring at her, and her mom, the girl's mom, says, stop staring. So we know that nothing in filmmaking is done by accident. That was a purposeful scene. And I don't know what the director's intent was. I haven't watched the Q&A or anything like that. But to me, the intent there was to make a parallel between how representation works and how representation can impact one's life. And mm-hmm. by using the black doll, it said to me that now we're at a place where we have people who look like other people, and or like dolls and characters and things like that, who look at like marginalized people. And because we're at a place where we have black dolls, little black girls, one, feel represented, and little black girls, two, or like other kinds of little girls, don't stare at little black girls because they've seen black uh-huh. dolls and they've seen black characters on TV and film and things like that and in cartoons. And to me, like, the next leap was, where are disabled dolls and disabled representation? Mm-hmm. I agree. Where are disabled dolls? Where is disabled representation? What I don't agree with is using the black experience to mm-hmm. make a comment about the disabled experience when you have a film that is about one white disabled person and another white disabled person. You had no black disabled people in it, even though black disabled people are, if we talk about intersectional feminism, where like the multi oppressions that black disabled people face that white disabled people don't face. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have those people in it, but you're going to specifically use black people to make a commentary. Leave us the fuck out of it.
You could just ask leave the us same the questions. Fuck out of it. Without that.
Or you could ask that question and make the main character black. Mm-hmm. But you can't do both. You can't do both. It just doesn't work. Because I'm like, where the fuck were the black disabled people? What are you talking about, my nigga? What are you talking about? What statement did you actually try to make here? Because you tried and I didn't like it. Aside from that, I think it was a well-done film. This one is on Amazon and MailChimp. So after it goes off Amazon, you can still watch it on MailChimp, probably. I don't know what's in MailChimp's mind. These shits have been up for like 2 months on MailChimp. I don't know what they're doing. It has nothing to do with sending out emails. I don't know, but there you go. The next film, we have 2 more. The next film is called Dirty. The synopsis is, Marco cuts class to spend the afternoon with his boyfriend. Things do not go as planned. So this film is the classic, like you see in coming-of-age films, the losing your virginity story, but in the context of queer sex, and in this case, gay sex between 2 men. And it's a bit awkward and gets messy as first times having sex do. And I think it highlights a real-life gap in knowledge when it comes to sex ed that teens across America, probably the world, face. And it also provides a soft landing for youth who might be lacking knowledge going through their awkward, what they feel is shameful first time sex experiences. So like, it's awkward and it is messy and the main character like feels strange about it. But there's also like a comforting voice that says like, oh, it's not your fault that you didn't know these things. And I think that that gets at like every, like the first time any of us have had sex, it's probably not our fault that we have no idea what the fuck is going on, because we've been so like, sex is so stigmatized, and talking about sex outside of like, use a condom, don't get an STD, outside of that is so lacking. And I really like the fact that they centered this around two men having sex, because that's something that I'm not in school anymore, but I've never heard about what kinds of things one might want to do in terms of grooming themselves or in terms of like hygiene when it comes to before and after of anal sex, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the film really highlights that. One thing that made me uncomfortable, and I don't know if this was just me or if this is other people watching like things like this. So I thought that the depiction of intimate moments was well done, and it was literally intimate and not like pornified or anything like that, which I think is a really good treatment, especially when it comes to queer sex, because people can like hypersexualize queer people. But like the youth, I don't think they used like actual teenagers or anything like that, even though they were in high school in the film, but they look like youth. I saw them in high school and there was like a lot of intimate scenes, and I just would rather not see that. Or mm-hmm. like when it happens in like a show like Euphoria or something like that, I just like, okay, I'm gonna look away or whatever. Or like, okay, speed it up. But this is a short film, and I would say like 50% of the film is just them being intimate, and I'm just like, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see y'all doing that.
Not me, the adult watching the kids talking.
But no. Like kids, I think like this is actually a really good film for like young queer
adolescents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, adolescents. Things that are not mentioned in the film that I thought was nice. The main actor is a trans teen. He specifically asked the director like to have certain moments that I guess allude to him being trans, but not have the plot of the film being about him being trans. And I didn't realize those moments, and I went back and watched the film, and there's some moments in there that I'm like, oh, okay, like that's nice. That one, you're actually casting trans people and giving work to trans people, and two, you're allowing for that representation and folks to see themselves, but not making it just about one note of your identity. Last film is called Father of the Bride. This one I am going to spoil a bit. If you care, use the time code in the show notes to skip. And then also this one will contain a discussion on the aftermath of a sexual assault. So if you don't wish just to listen, also check the show notes and skip to the time code listed in the show notes. So the synopsis of this one is: the best man attempts to keep face and deliver his speech at his brother's wedding following an encounter in the hotel bathroom with the father of the bride. I just gave a content warning. The director didn't give a content warning, and I don't think that... this is like kind of like a debate that I'm trying to feel out for myself, and I don't really know how I feel about it. I think right mm-hmm. now, I don't think that every piece of media needs to come with a content warning, but I think that like when you're making purposeful media or doing something on purpose in a space, it makes sense to do it. So like this podcast is about sex, love, and dating. So I think it really makes sense for us to give content warnings when we're talking about sexual assault, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the director said something along the lines, because like they let the directors in the short films, they let them speak for like 2 minutes before the movie starts, in lieu of the fact that you would actually get to speak to the director in person at a festival, or they would do a Q&A or a talk back at a festival. So the director says something along the lines of, this film is about an encounter in a bathroom. That's all I'll say. I'll let the film speak for itself, but I will say it's inspired by recent events. And from that, to me already, I was like, oh, I know what this is about. I see where this is going. But why I didn't get the discreteness of it
mm-hmm.
when it's like something that's so, can be so triggering for folks. And you like, that's what your movie's about. And you, I assume that you know that. That's like what your movie is about how it affects people. And it's not like, to me, like when you say something like that, like, oh, I don't want to give it away, that means that like sexual assault is the plot twist. And mm-hmm. that's the aha moment. And that's like not a very good plot twist. One.
Not at all.
And two, it's not a plot twist in the film. It's very obvious what's coming. So like, why are you hiding that? Strange. I don't know. That was like a weird thing to say. But he was also a white dude. So I think he's figuring it out. He's figuring it the fuck out. Good luck to that man, though. Yeah, so I didn't love that. Let's talk a little bit about the plot. So the best man is... I'm actually just going to give the plot because there's some things that I want to unpack. So the best man is in the bathroom working on the speech. The father of the bride comes in to pee. They're both urinating at the urinals. there's mad urinals open. The father of bride gets way too close. He looks over the stall. So like these things are building. They are done urinating. They're washing their hands. The father of the bride asks the best man to help fix his tie. And he just like crosses barriers a couple of times. Like he's like, fix my tie. And he fixes his tie. He's like, oh, put the collar down. He's like, are you kidding me? And he's like, put the collar down. He makes him put the collar down or whatever. He goes back to washing his hands. Father of the bride like steps in and digitally penetrates the protagonist through his clothes and makes a comment. And then he leaves the bathroom and the protagonist is just in the bathroom, kind of just like looking at himself in the mirror, washing his hands, like, what the fuck? Like, he's still trying to process what the fuck just happened. Then it cuts to the father of the bride making a charming speech. Everyone's laughing. He's the center of attention. He's the belle of the ball, all that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of like zooming in on the protagonist who's just like knocking back glasses of wine and like people laugh. And then like the protagonist does a delayed laugh. Like he's like dejected from what's going on in the situation. Then the protagonist is set to make a speech because he's the best man. His speech is not good. Because of what just happened to him. Obviously he's shook up. He's drunk. He makes a comment regarding, like, in the realm of back in the day when him and his brother used to be in their heyday, like something that alluded to sexually assaulting a woman, which I thought was interesting in there, like that dynamic of like perpetrators can be perpetrated against.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody laughs at it. The joke doesn't land. And then he's like, but you guys were all laughing at the father of the bride or whatever. Eventually he throws up because he's so drunk during the speech. The father of the bride offers to help him and take him home. The protagonist like says fuck off. He like pushes him away or whatever. The protagonist's girlfriend is there. At some point she's like, yo, what's going on? Like, you're acting a little bit weird, you're very drunk. He tells her to fuck off too. Like, he lashes out against her. Then he leaves. Well, the father of the bride is dancing and he's the belle of the ball again. Everybody's dancing with him and he's so fun. The protagonist leaves, smokes a cigarette, throws a rock into the father of the bride's car. And then the film kind of ends there. Also note, the father of the bride is like a white man in his 50s. The protagonist is a black man in his early 20s. Things I appreciated. The highlights of outside charm versus private horror, like that dichotomy. The director said he was inspired by the situation with Kevin Spacey and people like that. So I appreciated that. And I think it's really necessary for people to understand, because whenever someone comes forward, it's like, not my dude, such and such. He would never do such and such. He don't act like such and such around me. But it's like, that's not how this works. It also hits on some of the ways that men deal with being, and I think maybe everybody, but this is specifically about men, deal with being assaulted and the destructive nature that comes with that. So instead of like feeling safe enough to talk about this and let his brother know and be like, yo, we gotta call off this fucking wedding because this nigga is wildin', he starts drinking, he tells his girlfriend to fuck off, he's not talking to anybody, and ultimately he reacts with violence by throwing a rock into a car. And then also I like the fact that it hits on how assault can be really jarring and confusing when it happens to you, especially when it's someone of your same gender. So like, oh, I forgot to mention, when they're urinating, the father of the bride like exposes himself to the main character and he's just like, like, this guy's playing around or whatever. And how those lines can be really like, oh, what is like, oh, you know, boys being boys, and how that can easily get into a situation where you have been assaulted or someone is harassing you and you're like, wait, what just happened? Because I thought it was boys being boys just now. Like, how did this happen so fast? I don't even get this. I can't even process this. Here's my only, well, not my only, but my main criticism of the film that I'm curious to hear what other people think about. So there are surface level things that hit on the power dynamic between the perpetrator and the victim, which I think plays into why the survivor or victim didn't say anything. So there's the obvious, like, this is a white man, this is a black man, this is an older man, this is a younger man, this is the father of the bride, probably paying for the wedding, I'm here, I'm younger, he's charming, I'm not, whatever. But I wish that the protagonist's reasons for his actions following the assault were explored more. So I'm like definitely a fan of like subtlety in film and reading between the lines and making the audience think and things like that. However, this is such a prominent issue right now. Like, you said that you made this film in response to what's going on. You also, like, if you made the film in response to what's going on, you see what's going on and you see people's reactions to it. And I think that people don't live in the subtleties when it comes to sexual assault. Like, they don't, like, I feel like people need to have shit beaten into their brain to understand like these kinds of reasons why survivors don't speak up. And I get that this is a 10-minute film, but I really wish they like beat it into people's heads. And I understood the reasons why. And like I hit up a man that I know, but the only reason why I hit him up is because I trust him and I'm comfortable enough to talk to him about this. And he knows. So I was just like, damn, I don't got no niggas to talk to about this. So I don't know if it did a good job of relaying why people don't speak up in these encounters and why these encounters even happen in the first place. Because like one thing I think about is like when Terry Crews talked about his assault and people were just like, you a big ass nigga, how come you didn't beat him up? Like I could see an ignorant person watching this film and being like, man, once dude showed his dick to me, I would have punched him in his face. And it's like, no, the fuck you wouldn't, because that's the father of the bride of the person that your brother is marrying. But like, I just wanted like something more there. I wanted them to make it really obvious, and it wasn't really obvious in my opinion. What do you think about that? Like, do you think a film should be very obvious in that way?
I agree that there are times where, actually, no. I feel like all films, like I feel like sometimes I'm watching a film and there will just be things that I miss because I'm not getting that nuance. I'm not getting it could have been clearer for me. And when we're talking about such significant things like sexual assault, and you're again, like you're saying that he's claiming to have made this movie based on what is happening in current news, that it should have been very like explicit, like cannot miss. There could have been a scene about the father of the bride, like pulling his power card or displaying it. Like there could have been just one piece of interaction that really displayed that power dynamic, if that's the underlying subtlety that you know are moving forward on. I agree, and I'm gonna watch this, but I agree that there could have been at least in 10 minutes you could have shown a way in which, besides the fact that he's charming, you could have shown a way in which the protagonist could have felt, you know, scared or intimidated because of the nuances in their positioning.
Right. Yeah. I think like if like after the bathroom scene, like after he penetrates him, it could have been like, what the fuck are you doing? And the father of the bride being like, and what, you going to say something on your brother's wedding day? Shut the fuck up. Like stay in your place. Simple. Or something like that. Or like he tries to tell his brother and his brother is like, nah, he's just like that. Like he just plays around. Or like he tries to tell his girlfriend and his girlfriend is like, what? That couldn't have happened. Like you would have shoved him off or something like something like that. But alas. But yeah, so that one is on Amazon Prime until the end of May 6th at the time you're listening to this. So definitely, like, if you do get a chance to watch any of these, definitely, like, let me know your thoughts using the hashtag Interhoe Uprising on Instagram or Twitter or even in our Facebook group or anything like that. Patreons can talk to us on Slack. I'm really curious to see how everyone felt about these. Other cute notables from South by Southwest. Face to FaceTime is a funny one. Vert. That's a cute one, but I have some critique on it. I'd like to know how other people feel about it. And then Modern Horror is another. That's a nice one. Unpacking the life of a sex worker or a former sex worker. Vert is only on Amazon, but the other two are on Amazon and MailChimp. And once again, links will be in the show notes. And that's it for the first installment of Ass Media.
Oh, Sam, I loved it. Yay.
Thank you.
Actually, I want to see all of them. Period piece.
Like, there's too much media. We're being so spoiled.
Too much.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Oh, my gosh. And these are so great.
Thank you. Let us know about your romantic life or lack thereof.
Oh, child. It's a mess over here. I've been watching a lot of like romantic media. So then, of course, that makes me miss romantic relationships. That's just how it goes. and I'm noticing that it comes in waves. It comes in waves, and I unpack. Each time a wave comes in, I kind of unpack what has brought it on and, you know, what it really is. And I'm shifting. There used to be a mindset where I felt like I needed a partner, and if I didn't have a partner, I'd be alone, and kind of like these negative views of what being alone meant in general and as a woman. And as I've unpacked that and realized and still have these waves of like missing romantic relationships, it's shifting to, you know, this idea of never having a partner And, you know, what does that look like for me? And, you know, kind of more acceptance to that, because I can't deal with these niggas. And niggas is a very gender neutral term, but I can't deal with nobody. So that's been coming in waves as I'm watching all this romantic media. But right now I'm feeling really sexually touch deprived. And that comes in the waves of me missing, like, having partnered sex with people. And I unpack that as well. It's like, what am I missing? Like, sometimes I just sit down, I'm like, oh, it's just, that sounds so funny. But I sit down, I'm like, you know, I really could use some dick right now. What does that mean? Because it's not like a cup of dick, you know? Like, oh, I can use a really good coffee. But I, you know, I force myself to sit and unpack that. And sometimes it's not the sex, but all the things around it, you know, the touch, the smell, the engagement of the senses, the feelings, the validation, you know, it's all these other things that I'm missing. And, you know, lately I realized that, like, I felt like I was feeling touch deprived, but I hug my kid like every day and realized that it wasn't like not being able to touch people. I'm tired of touching myself in a sexual way, really, and missing that. And I don't know how to deal with that. I mean, there's no way to deal with that in the times of the Rona. But yeah, so with that, I've stopped masturbating because it kind of just reminds me of it. Like, it brings it more to the forefront. And it's just like, I really would love to be sexually touched by someone else that is not myself. So I've just stopped. And that's where I am in terms of that. I don't know, you know, if this too shall pass or what. I don't know how long we'll be in the lockdown, or even after lockdown, I'm interested in finding someone to sexually touch me. But we shall see.
Yeah, that's just like a fucked up factor of life.
It is. Like, going through this whole abstinence thing has been interesting, because in the beginning I always felt like I've always gone through long periods of not having sex, which kind of harkened to, like, my identity as demisexual. But, like, I've just always gone long periods without having sex, but this is different in a way, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, the ways that it is different and bring insight and awareness for myself, so that if I do resume partner sex, or, you know, the future looks different, I can bring all that information along. But it's been quite a journey.
Well, that's an upside. The fact that it's allowing you to do so much exploration, so that if and whenever it happens again, you are more empowered in these ways and you do know yourself so much more.
Yeah, it's really helped for emotional and sexual growth, actually. And, you know, in these times where it hits a hard bump and it gets difficult, I like remind myself that, you know, growth comes through discomfort. Growth comes through these challenges, and that I have to kind of reorient and dig deep about what about this is causing this, and, you know, learn and grow from it. And there's somebody out there that's gonna fuck me one day. I'm sure there is, you know.
Yeah.
There's
way too many people in the world for the probability to be like
to be that slim, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of this is a temporary thing, you know, in this discomfort, what can I grow? What can I learn from? How can I grow in that and, you know, build myself up as a sexual human being? So I'm riding that wave and seeing how it goes. I'm also kind of torturing myself with all these romantic things. But, you know, it's like when you feel a little down, feeling a little depressed, and you just throw on some extra music.
Yeah,
like,
just to get that cry out. Yeah.
To get it. You're like, I gotta dig myself a little deeper. I think that's what I'm doing. But I also enjoy, I'm a hopeless romantic. I enjoy, even if not for me, watching romance for other people. Like, it's just,
it's cute,
it's fun. It's so cute. It's like this sense of happiness that it's just like, oh, I'm just so happy for you, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. We'll see how that wave passes. But also, my period is missing.
What's up with that?
And I knew 2020 was gonna be a bad year, because I came in the year with my period missing in January. And I was like, this ain't gonna be good. I think I brought on the Rona. But that's how it started.
The end of the world. Like, who was carrying the fucking demon child or some shit like that? Immaculate conception, but not immaculate.
But not at all. At first I thought it was stress because I was transitioning from such a horrible, abusive job. Like, there was fluctuation in my weight, and I know all these things impact, you know, our cycle and our hormones and things. So, like, And I need to really start writing these things down, because I don't remember. I know it didn't come in January, But then I learned to de-stress and masturbate, and it came in February because I became more active of like reducing my stress so it's not impacting my health in this way. I'm foggy on if it came in March. I think it came in March, but it hasn't come in April.
Well, I mean, you have been working on de-stressing, but April was a fucking stressful ass month.
And, you know, I don't know if I'm minimizing it, but I feel like I was cooling in April, like, given the circumstances. Like, it's not whoosh, but maybe I guess the underlying anxiety of what's happening may still be, you know, in the back of my brain and causing me stress that I'm not acknowledging, which is still impacting my health.
Perhaps.
One thing I know is I ain't pregnant, so whatever's happening in that uterus, we'll figure it out when the doctor's open.
Keep us updated. Mm-hmm. Might ask you at the end of the month. Your period comes? Like a bad boyfriend or something like that? Like, pregnant? It's not mine.
I would love that. And lastly, it's been radio silence on these dating apps because I can't. Like, I can't.
What can't you do?
I can't talk to these niggas. I can't do it no more. Like, if y'all, where the queer people at? What apps are y'all using? I downloaded one called Lex the other day. It's more of like a personals format, which is cute, but it also has like a lot of white folks mm-hmm. in it. And you know, I don't do the white yep. folks. And I can't navigate or set it up for racial yeah. preferences. Which is okay, but also no, because I want people of color.
One cute thing about Lex is, I don't know, I have the app on my phone, but I don't use it. I just look at there because the whole personals thing, I'm not writing one, so it's a clip. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm just not that kind of person. But I follow them on Instagram, and when I see mm-hmm. their posts, like, because they'll put, I don't know if they do that anymore, but they used to put posts in their Instagram feed, and I just like quickly scroll through the post just to see if it said black, because mm-hmm. when people are defining themselves, like, they use black to describe themselves because it's true. Yeah. So that might be a little easier, just like a quick scroll. But yeah,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her is another app.
I was on her. I didn't like it, and I don't remember why I didn't like it.
It was for me, I didn't like the layout of it. Like, it reminded me of Plenty of Fish in that there was just a lot going on at once.
Oh yeah, I feel like I felt overwhelmed. Yeah, I was like, nah, this ain't it. Also with like OkCupid, that was just too much going on that app. I was like, God damn. It was too yeah. much. So what else is out there? What y'all got? Suggest something for me, because I can't. Like, I was talking to this guy, and we were talking on the app, and he's like some kind of coder, I guess. But he will like reference this coding project that he would do as like a starting point for conversation, and then continue to tell me that he can't tell me about it. So why do you keep bringing this up? And then I moved past it. He won't. Once I ask more about it and he tells me that he won't talk about it, he won't say anything else. Like, that's the end of the conversation.
What the fuck? What is this nigga working on, first of all? Let me find out.
So then I was ready to dead him, and this was on Coffee Meets Bagel. So, like, it gives you a time limit before your chat disappears or you can extend it. So he extended it and asked for my number, and I was like, okay, because our exchanges were night and day. Like, they were just so scattered and so far in between that I was like, all right, let's see if we can do this texting and see if I can get more information, like get to know you. And on text message, it's the same thing. Like, he's constantly bringing up this coding project, but will not tell me anything else.
So weird.
And I was like, yesterday was the last straw, because he brought it up again. He asked what I was doing this weekend. I'm like, oh, nothing, you know, house stuff, cleaning, cooking, you know, regular stuff. Asked him what he was doing this weekend. He was like, oh, you know, I'm just trying to stay productive. I'm like, how are you trying to stay productive? Again, he brings up this coding project. So I was like, is this the same coding project you can't tell me about? Like, what are we... And then he didn't say anything. So then I blocked him, because I'm not about to... Why are you trying to bait me with this coding project you can't tell me about?
That's fucking weird.
Do you work for the CIA? Like, why do you keep bringing this and will not offer any other information? I don't know anything about this young man. I don't know where he live. I don't know how old he is. I don't know nothing else about this man. But the fact that he worked on this coding project and he can't tell me about it.
I don't know if you can say too much more. Somebody's going to hack my fucking computer.
Like,
That's very scary. People are really weird.
Do you think I work for the CIA? Like,
what is this? Yeah, like, you're trying to test him or something like that. Like,
weird conversations like that have happened on multiple apps, and I'm just like, I can't do this.
I would sit in on a, not an intervention, but just like a panel or something like that of just people who have success mm-hmm. on apps. And just be like, what is it that you're doing?
What are,
like,
you doing?
Like, am I doing something wrong? Because I thought that I was being a normal person. And maybe the person on the other end thinks that they're being a normal person. And there's just some sort of disconnect. But I would like to just, like, just be a fly on the wall and just consume what it is. Like, what are the tips? What are the techniques?
I'm here trying to employ witty banter that can be read through text and received the same way. Like, yeah. Asking insightful questions, trying to get more. And y'all are just... giving me dead ends. Like,
it is a coding project that I am unable to speak about. Well, if y'all have any advice for Kua when it comes to dating app selections, or what is the blockage here, we would all like to know, honestly. I would love to see that email. Write in to IHUpodcast@gmail.com. All right, so we are going to head into our next segment. That segment is called Fuck You, and it is about your sexual, romantic, and dating lives. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to IHUpodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. Also, because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail, and we'll play it and respond to it on the show. If you would like to do that, you can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. That is 404-491-9158. And that will be in the show notes too. This week we have a voicemail. I don't know the person's name, but I do know that the voicemail is about how to keep sex fun when you aren't with your partner and things of that nature. Because you're quarantining in two different places. Okay, here it is.
So my pronouns are he and him. And I'd love some advice from you guys. My boyfriend and I were in an open relationship before Rona began. And obviously now we're not having sex with other people. And we're also not having sex with each other. We are not quarantining together. I live with my family. He lives with his roommate. All of which are rightfully so being very diligent about social distancing. We've tried a cyber sex. We haven't tried phone sex. We tried cyber sex. It's all right, but it really just solidifies the fact that we are not it together, touching each other and in person. I've tried cyber sex with him, and I'm one of the people who have begun cyber sex and camming since Rona has begun. I know cyber sex is something that's fun for me to do because I like getting the money out of it, but it's not something I take, like, great pleasure in myself. I put on a great show and I get off on the people watching me enjoying the show. Not necessarily get off on watching somebody else put on a show as well. I've watched other models and I've realized, like, it don't hit like it should be hitting for me. So I'd love some advice on, like, any other alternatives or any other things we can be trying to still keep the sexual energy alive, because I know on my end, at least, I want touch so badly and it's not happening. So any other sexual outlet that I can be having with my partner, I'd love to be open to trying something new. Thank you
for mm-hmm. calling in, Kua. I know you got some things to say,
and I don't know if you can help clarify. I didn't understand what he meant with about cyber sex with his partner.
I took that to mean FaceTime sex.
I did too. Okay, or some kind of video interface.
Right.
He did mention them trying phone sex, and I think that's what caused the confusion for me, because I was like, what's the difference? But
you see and then you,
and then you don't see, I guess. I live in the world of FaceTime that, like, we're seeing. But first off, try that phone sex.
Yeah.
if you ain't tried it, you talked about it, try it. See how, you know, see how that goes for you. The lovely good old mutual masturbation, because, you know, I have to plug it. It's like a sponsor. I don't know. But also, you know, I suggested reading erotica together, or Queer Walk has done these great erotic live readings. Whew, some hot and steamy stuff. Have you guys both tune into it? If you don't want to read to each other and listen to erotica together, you can send sexy voice notes to each other, whether it's like just dirty talk or recordings of solo sessions. So it's like you moaning into the phone and having like that audio, and you can send it to each other. You can send candid nudes, and it's like, what is a candid nude? And really what I meant by that is, because it ain't candid because we set it up, but set your phone up and do things in the nude, whether it's getting out of the shower and lotioning, or walking around your room in the nude, or dancing in the nude to music, and send that, or send actual stage nudes, you in lingerie, you in poses, doing things while nude. I would suggest guided masturbation with video or via phone sex, where one partner tells the other partner what to do. Guided masturbation, so they're telling you what to do and you're doing it and they're watching it and you both can enjoy. I don't know why I wrote here hump a body pillow, but hump a body pillow, this could just be for you. I think what sparked that idea was they said they missed touch, and I was like, well, ain't nobody gonna touch you sexually at home. So, yeah. You know, next best thing is to get on Amazon and order you a man double, stick a photo on it, hump it, see how that helps. You can send each other porn clips, whether your favorite or something you're deep diving into, and then talk about it later. You can go to an online sex party. We've talked at the top of the show how to find one. Act like strangers and enjoy each other that way and role play.
That's actually very, that kind of turns you on.
You can recount or revisit your past sexual encounters that y'all had when y'all wore together and talk about that. You can make a post-corona list of sexual activities or positions that you would like to do and fantasize about that together. You can ship each other sex toys, use them, and then talk about it, or turn on the camera and use them together.
Can I interject for that one?
Mm-hmm.
They have those partnered sex toys where you can remote control the others. Like you can control what somebody else's sex toy is doing from the comfort of your own home and vice versa. And they do have same sex versions of those where they sell it like in pairs for like two men, two women, and things like that.
Oh, amazing. Also shipping sex toys, ship lingerie or pieces of sexual clothing, ties, bondage things to each other by surprise, so they get in the mail and now we're talking about it.
Ship lube. Send lube.
Send lube. That would be lovely. And if all of that fails, we can just kind of start shifting our views to strengthening other forms of intimacy that we can have. You know, sex might just not be a thing during the times of the Rona, and that's okay as well. But yeah, you can talk about ways to foster and strengthen emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy, recreational intimacy, spiritual intimacy, like just shift the focus onto other things that you guys can do for your relationship at this time. And when the Rona passes, all that intimacy, all this, you know, all these other areas of our relationship that we fulfill help to heighten our sexual relationships. So you know, you're doing all of this. By the time the Rona is gone, we ready to go. Like, jets are running. He got the lube at his house because you sent it. We're ready to go. Like, we're all prepared.
Yeah.
That's all I have. It was fun really ideating all these other ways to keep sexual intimacy going. That was really fun and ideating, and I hope that it helps. And, you know, let us know if it helps get the creative juices flowing for other things that are more tailored to you and your partner's relationship. Even if that includes, you know, opening, I don't know if you guys like, you're not having sex with other people, but bringing other people into these sexual experiences that you're doing virtually. That's not something we've done before. Boom, spice.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not a thank you for that. I think that was amazing. And I hope that helps you. I have a thought that maybe is not advice, but just kind of a thought worth exploring. You are in an open relationship. Well, I'm not sure if you're still open or not, but if you are, I'm curious about what sex with virtual sex or cyber sex or whatever is like with other people right now. And that kind of like using that as a basis of what actually is the root of the issue. Like maybe, and it kind of seems like you're just not into watching other people. Like what you said with like watching cam models and things like that. So if like sex doesn't hit with somebody else, maybe it's that. But if cybersex does hit with somebody else, maybe it's like both of you together, because you're so like used to being intimate in person, are experiencing like some sort of blockage when it comes to cybersex or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Food for thought. I don't know. Yeah. Definitely keep us updated. Oh, this is such a strange time.
Such uncharted territory. Yeah.
I think it's like definitely weird and sad the moment that we're in, but I think it's very, I've said this in multiple episodes, but I think it's very interesting that we are using this medium to explore like digital intimacies, to take a note from Zalika's book, one of our previous guests on Inner Hope Risings. Yeah, like how digital intimacies play out in the time of that Rona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your experiences with us, everybody, and like helping contribute to this massive, growing, living, breathing oral history that we have right here. Mm-hmm. That's what the fuck this is, son.
All right.
All right, let me step out of my bag and back into it. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you so very much.
So much. Again, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hope Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Hope Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hope Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. You can go to innerhopeuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, to pay a hoe, or to check out our merch. You guys can follow me, Aku, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram.
It's Hey with two Y's.
Sure.
You used to say it and then you stopped.
Oh, you
I don't know
spell
when
it out.
Stopped. Yeah.
I did.
It's like being in a long marriage where it's like, oh, you used to bring me flowers and then you stopped.
And then you stopped.
I don't know when he stopped, but I used to like that.
Oh gosh, I should do it. I'm gonna start spelling again. So that's Hey Akua Girl, HEYYAKUAGIRL on Instagram.
Gotta get used to it. It's like riding the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta get reused to it. I'm SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen Sam Diego on Instagram for some former travel and food photos and the stories right along with them. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye.